19th Street in Manhattan. And I know that's the street that the Aleister Crowley store was on, which he says in the next phrase, next clause. A couple of blocks west of the Magical Child bookstore, I used to go there. Bought my Robert Anton Wilson books there. Never bought the occult stuff. That was bullshit. The Crowley stuff, didn't buy it. Looked at it, but knew it was shit. Anyways, every Thursday night, Chateau 19 occupied the premises of a swingers club called Night Moves on 19th Street in Manhattan, a couple of blocks west of the Magical Child bookstore, where I was working at the time. Now, I didn't go in there until the 80s and 90s, so I missed him. He probably wasn't there when I went in there. It was clean, well-lit, and well-appointed. It certainly wasn't when I was there, let's say in the late 80s, early 90s. It was dark, dirty, and they probably weren't making any money anymore. That's what I remember. It was clean, well-lit, and well-appointed. The crowd was cool. Oh, wait, he's talking about the club, not the bookstore. Okay, do that again. The club was clean, well-lit, and well-appointed. The crowd was cool. One of the guys that ran it belonged to Anita Pallenberg's coven up in Westchester. Remember, she was the groupie lover of several of the Rolling Stones, Anita Pallenberg. I'm pretty certain that it took less than 2 hours for me to wind up stripped and bound to a 12-foot ladder by a beautiful Italian dominatrix who called herself Parvati. She worked me over until closing time, admiring and testing my endurance, then took me home to her place up in Central Park West to harvest the fruit of her labors. I became a regular there every Thursday night until I hooked up with the woman whom I'd eventually marry, Bonnie Wilford. We met through the Magical Child bookstore. She was living upstate in Kingston, and our time together was sufficiently intense and rewarding as to require no outside stimuli. By the time we moved back down to the city, Night Moves, the legendary Plato's Retreat, and every other sex club in New York City had either shut down or been shut down by the health authorities in the wake of the as-yet-unnamed gay cancer epidemic. Got gay cancer in quotes. In 1983, we moved to San Francisco. In the 5 years that we lived there, we saw no evidence of any kind of heterosexual S&M scene. Not that we were looking terribly hard. We were a perfect dyad, complete and self-contained. Occasionally, we'd get into it with close friends, mainly fellow initiates in Aleister Crowley's notorious OTO, a co-ed, quasi-Masonic magical fraternity with a well-deserved reputation for sex and drug orgies. We were doing all kinds of insane variants on tantric rites, augmented by meth, LSD, MDMA, absurd amounts of pot, and radical S&M practices. Flash forward to 1992. Bonnie and I were back in New York City, living in a 1,400-square-foot loft in Dumbo, 3 blocks from the East River. The loft was 2 stories high, and we had a trapeze hung from the rafters. By this point, we were blazing a whole new path with the OTO, grafting Crowley's original theories about sex magic onto our own increasingly extreme practices of female domination and ritual torture. I was out touring with various tinted spectacles most of the time. We know that he eventually worked with Cirque du Soleil. But when I was home, Bonnie would hold these salon affairs where she and her girlfriends would work me over for extended periods of time in the pursuit of kicks and empowered transcendence. I spent a lot of time hanging from that trapeze. In 1993, that's when we show up in Manhattan, we discovered a new club in the Chelsea district of Manhattan called Paddles. Paddles catered to a mixed crowd, predominantly hetero and bisexual, with a heavy emphasis on female domination. In a society as regressively patriarchal as ours, the public expression of gyno supremacy at the most primal physical level was a unique form of ecstatic subversion, a situationist reversal. Now, situationist where the dadaist, radical artists and politicos in France in the 60s, they published stuff and were influential in the May 68 Paris strike and riots. Their leader, Guy de something, wrote a famous book, The Spectacle, something about the spectacle. Guy Debord, and something about the spectacle, which was a perverted European version of McLuhanism. So the situationists were the radical yippies of Europe. So he's saying that this club was a unique form this group around his wife. They're back. They've been to San Francisco, and they're back in Chelsea, Manhattan, 93. The club called Paddles with a gyno supremacy at the most primal physical level was a unique form of ecstatic subversion. A situationist reversal of the ossified power dynamic inherent in all mainstream expressionisms of sexuality in America. A situationist reversal of the ossified power dynamic inherent in all mainstream expressions of sexuality in America. Bonnie would take me there with her posse, and we owned the room. The crowd was attractive, and so were we. We got to be regulars there. There was a total lack of retention on that scene at that time. There wasn't a lot of costuming. Most people wore regular street clothes or office wear. The obesity epidemic had not yet kicked in. People were hot, and tattoos were still an unusual affectation. I was totally buff, ripped abs and all, thanks to the circus. My pain threshold was off the scale. I could take anything short of dental work. Bonnie left me in 1997. Her father had always disliked me, and he bought her a house in Sarasota, Florida, just as I was taking off as a writer for the New York Press. Now, this would be when I was reading him. His timing was exquisite. There was no way I was going to abandon a gig with the New York Press to live in Sarasota, where the best job available to likes of me was clerking at Barnes & Noble for minimum wage and maybe running off with a mud show for 6 months of the year. That would be his circus gigs. I let her go with the admonition that as a cancer survivor, the choice of Sarasota was a uniquely self-destructive move to make, given the atrocious quality of the tap water there, thoroughly polluted by lawn chemicals and far worse than the water in Los Angeles. Not fit to drink, not fit to cook with, and not fit to bathe in. Unfortunately, Daddy prevailed. She'd always wanted his approval, and after four marriages, she finally had it. So this was his wife. So this is similar to the Daisy scene 20 years before. See, just check that. Bonnie was his wife. And Bonnie ran this weird scene. I won't say weird, S&M scene that was a hit in the clubs. Okay, so she now is on her own. She died in 2003 after a 2-year bout with cancer. So I guess he predicted that. I disengaged with a lot of things for a while after that and hung out a lot with Daisy. She wasn't really into the S&M thing at all. So this is when he hooks up with Daisy. Remember, they leave New York City in about 2005 and then been together for a couple of years up near the Cloisters they lived, the top of Manhattan. It was always fashionable in underground circles, but it had begun to surface in a big way at the turn of the current century. And by 2010, it was fully mainstream. Eliza was a member. I knew Eliza. She hung out with some whack job called Ion. She was truly a nasty wrinkle, but she was up to date. What do you think of that? Geez, let's unmute here. Unmute this.
All participants are now unmuted.
There's certain things I have to keep secret, Bob.
Yes, well, you nailed him. No wonder he won't answer your emails. He's exposing you. And we find out what he thinks of Ion. Way back then, 6 months ago. I missed that when I read this first. I guess I blocked it. I didn't want him to have an opinion about Ion yet. I wanted to turn him on to Ion, but you fucked up. You presented Ion as an inarticulate fuckface that you probably didn't know how to fucking describe properly, right?
It was meant to be that way.
Okay. Whatever is right. Okay. All right. So have you been laughing at anything I've read so far?
Well, so far you've just been reading the article and wasn't really laughing.
Yeah, it's not funny. It's just straightforward subculture. Okay. Mute all.
All participants are now muted.
It was always fashionable in underground circles, this S&M stuff, but it had begun to surface in a big way at the turn of the current century, and by 2010 it was fully mainstream, but with a truly nasty wrinkle. It was nearly all male dominant and incredibly fat. The casual intersections of the science fiction RPG playing cosplay. Oh, my phone's going down. I'll try to finish this. I'll get little interruptions occasionally. Okay. the casual intersections of the science fiction RPG playing cosplay occult Nick crowds with the S&M crowd had resulted in full assimilation by psychopathic and often autistic vengeful nerds obsessed with protocol, gadgets, and costuming. What could that be? RPG playing cosplay, co-display, I don't know what that word is. The casual intersections of the science fiction RPG playing cosplay occult Nick crowds with the S&M crowd had resulted in full assimilation by psychopathic and often autistic vengeful nerds obsessed with protocol, gadgets, and costuming. Suffocating with boredom in the cultural void that is Silicon Valley, Daisy and I ventured forth into the local scene. There were a couple of clubs up in San Francisco, but they had dress codes and heavy cover charges, and with parking and driving, staying home with pot, TV, and a case of PBR looked altogether safer. I joined up with FetLife to scout the area. FetLife is like Facebook for pervs. We found a local gay bar in San Jose of some repute that hosted a primarily hetero bi night of S&M action once a week. Daisy went as a spectator, and to immune me against the straight-up shit-on-the-wall status reserved for unaccompanied men who are not either visibly wealthy or built like Greek gods. I needn't have worried about the Greek god part. I was the only man in the room with a BMI below 25. Daisy was the only woman in the room with a BMI below 25. I'm not talking about muscle here. I'm talking leather-clad dirigibles. I'm talking leather-clad dirigibles with cellulite-infested flesh hanging out. Consequently, the bar got crowded fast. Luckily, there was a spacious smoking pavilion outside, sparsely populated owing to superstitions prevalent among white people in California regarding tobacco. The crowd was entirely white and Asian. The conversation centered around games and tech, subjects about which I know nothing by deliberation. They might as well have been talking about football. There were nerd tech juggalos with juggalo tattoos. So that's gigolo, but fat gigolo. I never heard that word before. Juggalos. There were nerd tech juggalos with juggalo tattoos. One collared young woman, maybe means colored, I don't know. No, collared, on a leash. One collared young woman on a leash who must have weighed 300 pounds had a tattoo of Freddy Krueger's face on one knee and Pennywise the Clown from Stephen King's It on the other knee. We tried other venues, including a convention of S&M types in a four-star hotel and a high-end club in San Francisco. It's the same all over. Revenge of the male nerds. It got blipped out again. It's the same all over. Revenge of the male nerds. What I find profoundly disturbing about the mainstreaming of S&M is its synchronicity with the open admission that torture is official USA policy. That convergence is historically ominous, a sign of severe decadence and terminal hubris. This country has always employed torture and slavery as tactics. Witness our abominable prisons. The ritualization of slavery and torture loses its cachet when it is mainstreamed, even more so when it becomes an acceptable stylized and costumed peasant mockery of the more lethal games of our contemporary self-appointed aristoi. I guess that means oligarchy, aristoi. I'm avoiding that scene with its morbid obesity, its fascist couture, and its boring protocol. Its unwitting endorsement of the status quo is anathema to me. Intimacy is the new transgression. Compassion is the vice of kings. That's ionic. Oh, I got blipped out. That's ionic. Compassion is the vice of kings. So, unmute.
All participants are now unmuted. All participants are now unmuted.
It's longer, too.
Yes. He had something to write about. He has his own experience he can draw on. The recent short columns are filled with a kind of boiling, repressed rage. So he can't even bother making a couple of metaphors. Now, you guys say he's, ever since I got in touch with him, his quality's gone down, right? Getting not as exciting as he was, like in that article.
He's going into a tailspin since you contacted him. His articles are getting shorter.
Oh, that's a good point. He and Daisy really broke up when Bob got in touch with him. Yeah. I mean, they were going along pretty good. Now he's really alone. And I got to go upstairs and get the other phone. Yeah. His life is, he's all by himself now. So this is going to get interesting.
Well, let's see if he meets someone else in Europe.
Will he even get to Europe? He's ignoring me too much. That's not advisable. Just interacting me with bringing him some good frequency. We won't say karma. Call it frequency.
He's a prime candidate for the drops if he's considering himself 61 and over the hill or broken up or something. There was a reference in, I think, the first article. He called himself an old man or something.
Oh, yeah. No, he's not describing himself as too cool. He's physically over, and he's wallowing in it too much. He's suicidal.
Yeah.
Here, just a minute. I flip over. So, yeah, here we are, quote, psychoanalyzing him. We're doing a ionic outreach to someone who should know better, if he's such a cult wizard and a master of Crowleyite dynamics and been there and done everything. It's a good example. I mean, yeah, it's a good example of the challenge. This is America. He's symptomatic of America, the baby boomers and that. And he's acting out what we see all around us, and it's a role model of what happens when we attempt to reach out, which, of course, is doomed to failure, according to Ion. But we make the effort as a put-on to see what's going on.
I wonder if traffic to his website has increased since you started reading his articles on.
I would imagine it has. Oh, yeah. Bob comes into your scene, you're going to get slack in some form. So he's being offered slack. Maybe it was good that he broke up with Daisy. Maybe that's a good turn. He's saying he's glad to find out what she's really like. She's roadkill.
Who said that?
He said that about her. He said she's a loser. She showed that she was a loser, and she's going to, like Bonnie, die in a couple of years. Bonnie took the wrong move, left him, and went back to her father.
In Florida.
In Florida, where they all end up. I mean, I always see Florida as screwed up.
All participants are now unmuted.
Drought-ridden. They're both superseded by Maui. That's the new heaven. The new Florida. The new Los Angeles. Maui. Wailea division. My neighborhood. That's the last vestige of American utopia. So, how are we doing?
Bob?
Yes.
Oh, you can hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you put me on mute.
All right, good. You're off your speakerphone.
I wasn't on my speakerphone.
Oh, that's Eliza. You're not Deb. Oh, okay. I wonder who Deb would... What's your name this week, Deb?
Crazy Deb. Can we choose a name for you this time?
Yeah. CIA floozy.
Matahari.
Matahari, that's right. Yeah,
how about Giselle?
Giselle.
No, that's too exotic.
That's Tom Brady's wife.
What about Marlena?
That's cute.
Yeah, she played Matahari, I think, wasn't it? Didn't she, Marlena Dietrich, play the original Matahari?
She might have.
Yeah. One of those famous actresses did. So, I'm not interested in your opinion, Deb. You're so uninformed that it's not worth it. So you can venture forth, see if someone else is interested.
Sure.
You feel that dead air after she goes, sure.
Are you taking RNA drops, Deb?
No.
Well, then, okay.
I'm going to buy the magnesium.
Didn't you say that the last time you were on a month ago?
She was on last week, Bert.
Last week? I don't remember that.
Pretty sure. I think she was. Maybe you were gone.
It was the youth show.
Oh, you came on the youth show. Okay. Did you hear this week's youth show, Bert? It's pretty good.
Yeah, OJ's balloon popped a little bit, huh?
Yeah.
Where
he
about his school and everything. So that was it was fun. It's fun to listen to. It's really fun, engaging.
Yeah. So Deb, that's it. Nobody's interested in Deb. I mean, who we got here? We got Eliza and Bert and Renee and Sean over in London. Not many callers. Hey, Bill, you didn't tell us. There are thousands listening on their computer, Bill. Come on, Bill. Tell us about who's on that level.
What do you want to know, Bob?
Well, you know, you can read the numbers who are listening
Bill's
by...
Bill's awake.
Bill's awake, yeah. You know, you told me, like, you can see how many are listening on their computer, not calling in.
Oh, okay, hang on a second. I got to pull that screen up.
Yeah, we've never found this out. This is exciting. I predict 19.
In the million.
I predict 19 people. I'm saying, go Bob's number, 19. I mean, it is in the middle of the morning.
Okay, just in this world, how many people are listening on their computers?
World.
All right, I say over 100.
Okay.
Try splitting the difference, 76.
I'm impressed. Holy shit, there's 76 people. How could they communicate to us? How do they dare communicate to us?
we could
open the chat line.
Room, so.
Oh, yeah,
well,
let's try that. Let's try that. Kiki is asleep. He's not going to get on.
Yeah. Okay, open the chat room. As soon as Yigi shows up, it's over. Here's what Yigi was saying. Let's just run through what he was writing hours ago. I unengaged him. Let's see.
I unwarned him.
I know. It's just, I can't go way, okay, so, Sarah, Ion, hey, remember when I built that cray-cray Winchester house maze? Edison's medicine. Then Kiki comes on as Makishima. He says, boring, this may be the beginning. Sarah goes, at Makishima, correct? Then Makishima says, what did your name refer to? Then somebody who says, ta-da, I'm me too, puts a wink up. Julie says, Obama is having fun in Cuba. Makishima, Kiki says, is having fun drinking Bailey's Irish Cream and listening to synth pop industrial music. That's in quotes. So it's either referring to Kiki himself or maybe that's what Obama's reported to be doing. Ta-da says, oh, shit. Not old Greg, not another one. Oh, shit, not old Greg, not another one. Spells Greg with two G's, referring to Greg Sanders. Then Iron comes in and goes, look, Ma, it's the devil.
Look, Ma, it's the devil.
It's the devil. Meaning Kiki, I assume. D-E-B-B-I-L.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's referring to Kiki.
Yeah. And so Julie says, Ion is the Keshi Foundation in Iran, something you were part of. These people have crazy ideas, eh? That part of some Illuminati-funded Aleister Crowley, Ali Cabal spinoff in Iran. Then here comes Makishima commenting on Ion. Ion is not part of any Islamic terrorism. He's clearly a crypto-Zionist using New Age fads. I mean, shit, guff, are you stupid or something? Yeah, New Age fads. I mean, shit, guff, so he's putting down the word guff. Are you stupid or something? Then he says, watch Bob shut the chat room down in minutes or less. So he knew it was coming, but I had not seen him at that point. Yes, but I see him pretty quickly, I think. Then he says, faggot liberals must unite. Tada says, psst, cough, cough, psst, cough, cough. Ion says, We will see about that. We, capital we will see about that, meaning faggot liberals, watch Bob shut the chat room. And then Makashima, you know it's Kiki because only he knows the word Rai. Give Rai some fucking credit. Two needs to shut the fuck up already. See, two is another column in the tiny note chart. Rai, Eloy, two, Lofty, and Bob. So two would be the Thompson quadrant. Give Rai some fucking credit. Two needs to shut the fuck up already. I think he's referring to Ion as a Thompson quadrant channel, and he's calling two, which can mean you. He's insulting Ion. Then he says, ever since Bob left 5body.com behind, he has been Gaia all the way. He is a weaker Bob for it. Then he says, old Bob was brave and politically incorrect. New Bob is a new world order piece of shit. I'm a new world order piece of shit. So Ion, he says, this is when I noticed that. I get ready, I tell Bill to turn to shut it down. And right when I'm doing it, Ion goes, easy trigger, and he has a shock icon. So Ion knows that he's going to get nailed. Then Julie comes on and says, is Dr. Keshi's work valid? And then it's over, Achieve Radio comes in with the turn off button. And then Rhodesia Row up there in Toronto, Scott manages to put a light in. Somehow he managed to post too, but he's posting 17 seconds after Bill does. So then Sarah comes in right now and says, I think he's retarded. Now Sarah's really, now she's typing. I'm kind of worried about that guy, says Sarah. Are you talking about Kiki? Sarah, are you talking about Kiki? I think he's retarded. I'm retarded. I'm kind of worried about that guy. So what, Sarah? Answer me. Are you talking about Kiki or someone else? Or me? Are you talking about me?
Got about a 45-second delay on the broadcast.
Oh, okay. So we got to wait. Then she'll type. Thanks, Bill, for that proper advice. Okay, Sarah. Who are you referring to? Who are you worried about?
Uh-huh.
So she has to go, uh-huh. So I guess she doesn't want to say his name. So.
No, you asked, are you talking about Kiki? And she said, uh-huh.
Yeah, no, I get it. But maybe she doesn't want to say the name. Can't even do it, so we understand. Then she goes, no. What the fuck? What did we say that she's saying no to?
You asked her if she was talking about you after that.
Oh, I asked about, she's talking about me? Okay.
First
all
you
right.
said, are you talking about Kiki? And then you said, are you talking about me?
Right, and then I might have said someone else. Okay, and then she goes, do, D-E-W. That means yes. So basically it's about Kiki. I don't think Kiki's retarded. He might be, he's not even worried. He's more of a put-on, a joker, a prankster.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Wait a minute. No, I'm going the wrong way. I thought all of a sudden there was all these emails, but I went down rather than up. Okay. So, okay, Sarah, well, you can come on and talk to us. I'll not mute you, Sarah. Then she asked me, Keith Mussenden? Yes, I'm referring to Keith Mussenden. Yes. That's who we're talking about. That's Kiki. You know, Bert, I think you said, I'm not sure, what's the song that I played last week you said it gave you chills? Oh, yeah, no, the Zappa Closer, which we call She Thought He Was a Muffin. You find that gives you chills?
Yes. At the end, what you plug into, it's really, they're right at the top.
Yeah.
Of their closing when they do it, and it's really, it just gives me chills every time I hear it.
That's good, because it doesn't give me chills, but I really like it. It's an awesome liftoff. Now she's going, nah, he's loud. Oh, okay, so she's saying he's not retarded, he's not a put-on, he's loud. Yes, he's a over-aggressive put-on.
Yeah, he's
That's
obnoxious.
Yeah. He's out of sync. So he's not retarded. He's the kind of people Alan Cabal doesn't like. Just never had a break, always out of sync with people, always alone, slighted. Even though Yuri likes him somehow, respects him in some way, but maybe Yuri doesn't know enough.
He sounds humble now, though. He doesn't sound as aggressive as he was before you cut his line. Because I was listening when he came on. I heard him. He doesn't sound like the same aggressive...
Yes, Yuri.
That's because
Yuri's
you didn't get to read his chat last week, Bert.
Say again?
No, we're talking about Yuri.
Yuri was... You're talking about Yuri or Kiki?
Yuri has changed. He's a lot calmer or something.
Oh, he wasn't humble in the beginning? Like quiet? Or...
No, he was a little defensive in his voice and wanted to tell us about himself. They realized it didn't impress us at one bit, actually made him look bad.
He wasn't impressing us, man.
So he's starting over again, but he was mumbling like Sarah a little bit there. Remember? We had to tell him, stop projecting your puny opinions, likes and dislikes. Sarah says, and he smells like straight up shit. Does he actually smell, does he have body odor, Sarah? Kiki, we're talking about. Does he have bad mouth breath? What do you say, Sarah, to that? We gotta wait 45 seconds. Want me to play some music in the interim while we wait for her response?
Yeah, Alan Cabal said he doesn't like men with bad hygiene.
With what?
With bad hygiene.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, the gay scene is bad hygiene. I'm inclined to be particular about that, too. Hygiene.
Yeah.
What's a beautiful... hey, come on, it's been 45 seconds, Sarah. Does he have bad breath? Does he smell like shit, literally? He managed to sneak a question into Ion today.
Oh, yeah. I was surprised by
that. I heard that.
Because he sounded like Yuri in the beginning. And then
yes, he did.
And then it was him.
He probably altered his voice a little bit, toned himself down just to slip by. But his questions are always, what country in the world has this or that characteristic? That's what he did. It was a standard question.
So irrelevant.
So Sarah says, maybe there is some Bulgarian peasant fecal capsule. I mean, he smells like that, Bulgarian peasant fecal capsule. So rustic Eastern European, Slavic? Okay, so here's, you didn't hear the music. What do you think of this one, this song? I don't know why it ended. Maybe I clicked something. Okay, so we're getting ready to do Hitler, but we have a preliminary thing. First off, I don't really look at the inquicks enough when we're talking, engaging Ion. So Pamela and other people, I never get to your questions in time for Ion. They have funny remarks here and there. Eliza says, Bob, I have myself on mute. You don't need to mute me. Anyways, so Bert, did you see Roxy's postings this week? Do you look at my Facebook page, Bert? Or do you?
No, I'm not
by?
On Facebook.
Oh, okay. So you go by.
Bob, why don't you? Have you considered making your Facebook public, like the RNA Facebook?
No, I'm not going to make it public because too many people would shit on it. So.
Oh.
The thing is that the good stuff, Ed finds the good stuff that Roxy posts on my Facebook page and puts it on his site. So did you notice the documentary on Berlin, Sin City, something called Sin Cities of the 20s?
Yes.
Okay. That, when Roxy found that, she said, you know, it really described what Wyndham Lewis was describing in the Hitler book. It really showed the details. It's very unique footage. I'd never seen that footage before. They also do Paris and Shanghai. So lots of amazing footage in there. And it does illustrate what Lewis was referring to in Berlin in 1930. So we're going to see what happens next. And we evoked a few scenes. Roxy had posted on the chat line last week. She intentionally made the joke, or it was a mistake. She said, Hard-On Collider, right? The Hadron Collider, she made it Hard-On. And it got some major news outlet made that mistake. Time Magazine, CBS or something, put out a statement on the Hadron Collider at CERN and spelled it Hard-On. So I told her, that's how powerful she is. You know, we do things here, it shows up. And then the, I guess the Berlin stuff showed up and some other things showed up. A couple things we evoked, one could say. And now, Burp, you have a special experience happening to you. You got the new things. What have you, in learning incredible stuff?
Yes. What I find very interesting is that ION has put out with Carolyn in the last 4 weeks a lot of things that I have just reread or rediscovered.
Right. And there's echoes. Isn't there more detail now?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
But yes, and you can see. The earlier phase is what was going on, and Ion's continuing like that.
Yes, and he's got a lot more in the open than then. It's
yes, yeah.
And what I found interesting, and that's why I've got some questions, but I'll have some more digging deep as far as the eye cell. That point that you were covering last week about the eye cell.
Yeah,
Ion, you can never get. Like, if you were using a dart, you can never throw a dart at them as far as the eye cell and get a direct answer because it covers a lot.
Yeah.
Because I was listening this week, the first clip that I listened to that really had me buzzing is you and I were talking about the anthropomorphic physical. It's like 53
yeah.
minutes. And it seems to me that you all were talking about the eye cell, but Ion said it hasn't been invented yet because the description that you give in there of the relationship of the RNA and the ion, it's really fun to listen to now considering when I heard it, you know, 2 years ago. But yes, Ion, a lot of the information that Ion has put out has already been released by you.
Yeah, and it's like Ion says, we've already given you all the answers.
Yes.
We want new questions. And, yes, so that anthropomorphic point that you're making is part of the big discovery tonight.
Yes.
The people, we can anthropomorphize that people are human beings. They look like humans, but they're interacting like chemistry, like elements. So, yes, that's what we developed tonight, even more so. So it's almost like Ion can give out almost everything now because we've finished making it. You know, so back then, a few years ago, we were in the process of making it and hadn't made it, and Ion didn't want to be ripped off by somebody. But now
yeah.
it's been done, it doesn't matter who knows how it's done. That might be a factor.
Well, actually, and also all of the melting titaniums that you shared, there's a lot of information in there. I just happened to
yeah.
just, by chance, just selected melting titanium 30. And Ion describes what the moon does. And Ion put out, someone asked him a question 2 weeks ago about what would be the effect of the blood moon. And Ion said that we would see the light differently. And I listened to Melting Titanium 30 yesterday, and Ion described that there's a special UV light that the moon projects and it has an effect on everyone.
Right, so that was said a couple of years ago, and
yes.
you said 2 weeks ago the similar idea was said.
Yes, and he came directly
wow.
and said that the light is different. The light will be different after this last blood moon.
After the last one in September or after the one we just had?
One we just had.
So each moon is altering. Each blood moon is altering something, yeah, a little more.
Yes.
Do you know that we've had since 1 AD, there's been only 55 tetrads.
Tetrads?
Yeah, the blood moon tetrads. Like when there's four.
Who calls it a tetrad? Oh, you mean four times?
Yeah, there's a gap of 6 months between each blood moon. And it's
and
not often
four.
When it, yeah, it's four.
So it takes about 2 years.
Yeah, it takes 2 years.
And who calls it a tetrad? Science?
Yeah, that's what they call it.
Okay. That's interesting. So it's been 55 of those.
Since 1 AD. And they say in the 21st century, there's only going to be eight tetrads, and that's still an unusually high number.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I guess they're significant. And, you know, Ian started telling us about it back in 2010 before we knew anything about it. Had there not been a blood moon in the 20th century for a while? I never got
No,
that
blood
clear.
Moons happen. Blood moons occur. They're not so rare. But tetrads,
right.
When they happen consecutively, like within a six-month space apart,
that's rare.
More rare.
So there's only been a few in the 20th century.
There'll only be eight tetrads in the 21st century, and since 1 AD, there's only been 55.
Do you know how many were in the past 100 years?
In the past 100, no. Probably less than, like, 10.
Right, so there hasn't been many. So when we had a tetrad since December 2010, the start of the tetrad, that's pretty rare over the last 100 years.
No, this tetrad started last year. One happened in spring, the other happened...
Oh, that's right. It didn't happen in the blood moon, the 2010 one. That's right. It started last year. So the blood moon was not one. That was not part of a tetrad of December 2010. That's not part of a tetrad. They can be separate.
That was one on its own. It wasn't part of a tetrad.
Right. So... if the people cause these changes, the moon's movements makes these is part of the alchemy of it too. I guess the movement of everything. But maybe the prime thing is to notice the one thing people never think of, that people are the factor in the, you know, it's like when a plane crashes, does the accumulation of a certain people who want to be suicidal adds up, and then there's synergy and the plane goes down. That's something I have to ask Ayan. Now, how much does that crowd dynamic make the plane happen? Because he says people kill themselves on purpose on those planes. How many was required? And, of course, there's probably infinite answers to that. If you have a real strong person, maybe that overrules everybody. You know, I have on my chart, actually, if you think of it, I have each media, the Taino chart, and it's represented by people, and the people represent chemical processes. That very point that people are the interaction of the alchemy is in my Taino chart. I can't say I did not know it personally, unless I thought it, but did not know it in ionic ways we know things. So now I know it, and now I can see it in the chart. Because each quadrant represents an aspect, and the group of them makes a crowd dynamic that leads to the hexatic. And you have LaRouche is both newspaper and homeopathic radio, and some other chemical terms that are up in the top part of the chart.
It's fascinating how you talk about the elements, the different elements in your chart.
Yeah.
The reference in each quadrant and even up above. It's it covers everything. Your chart covers
pretty well
everything.
Every knowledge system. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I've got the obscure stuff from Thompson, Croker, McClune, LaRouche, and then I have mainstream memes mixed in. The most obscure is Rai, Eloy, Tu, and Lofty. There's four forces. People can be those forces. Have to be. They created them. So that's interesting. I show the, on the other chart, the Dobbs formula chart, I've got the five members of the Finnings-Wake family, and they are different environments. That's people being environments right there. And the ratios they create. That's right there in the bigger chart.
Yes.
So, Bill, you should be impressed, Bill.
Then let me take a nap.
Oh, who said that?
Renee.
Are you going to take a nap?
No, I said, Bill said, let me take a nap.
That's
my
right.
phone's going to take a nap soon because everything keeps going down.
Right. Did Bill say that? Or are you just pretending he's saying it? Yeah, no. Okay, so we got to do Wyndham Lewis. Any other ideas before we do Lewis?
You know, Ian mentioned Coachella earlier, right?
Yeah, no, that was pretty good. I don't know if you heard that, Bert. Ian, we did something, a new level. Ian tells us what's happening on the web. We go and broadcast it. So he told us we didn't know what the word Coachella was, but pretty quickly we found out it was a festival, and then they happened to be interviewing a guy who went to Coachella 20 years ago, 15 years ago. So we got the whole history of the Coachella thing with perfect timing. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm. And I got the Coachella Snapchatted to me, so like it gives me little video clips of the people who are at the festival.
Good. Is that called Snapshot, that service?
Snapchat. Yeah, it's you know, I didn't think it was all that, but it's really fun because the people who you know, they send you, like, they communicate with you by sending you a little video clip or a little picture with, like, a caption or something on it. And it's up to them of how long you can view it for, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, or they can leave it up as their story for 24 hours. But it shows you in the moment, you know, who's doing what, where they are.
And what's it called? Snap what?
Snapchat.
Snapchat.
Snapchat. How do you spell Coachella?
Coachella.
Coachella.
Coachella, C-O-A-C-H-E-L-L-A.
Yeah, Coachella.
Coachella, okay. Thanks.
Okay, so I was thinking since we top of the hour coming up in 8 minutes, I'm going to play a couple of Second City stuff. Get some samples of that. They seem to have an SCTV Second City full episodes and series.
Right,
they seem to have it. What?
I was just playing a little clip. Do you want to hear it?
No, just a minute. A clip of what?
Of the Coachella.
No, I don't care about that. Wait, what's it to play? A bunch
you,
of...
you had it live, you had it, playing when it was live earlier?
Yeah, just a bunch of noise, you know, that crap. I mean, I was thinking about what, my DJing is different. It wouldn't work in that environment. They want loud, scratchy, whatever they do, what Tesco does. They wouldn't want variety. What do you think?
It's a variety for them, but it's you know, loud.
Right. So the I'm looking for the clips of SCTV, not the full episodes. But they have a lot of the man. You guys can look at it all. It's all there. Second City episodes. But here's one, the best of SCTV. Now, this might be excerpts, and they would be short. So maybe let's try that. It says an hour and a half. That's not a whole show. Okay. Bring up the soundscape. Okay, it's not making noise. So what was that thing? Did we mute anything? Well, let me demute the video. Demute. What does one have to do? That. Okay.